Hey everybody, welcome again to F This Movie, the special summer wrap-up episode of F This Movie, F This Summer 2011.
Hey Doug, catch this beach ball.
Wow.
We're being invaded!
You guys caught me completely off guard.
My name is Patrick.
I'm dropping beach balls, I'm not protecting the shore from the invaders.
In 3D!
My name is Patrick, I'm joined tonight by a murderer's row of F This Movie contributors. JB...
And tonight, I'm in 3D.
And Doug.
I'm in 4D. Smell is the fourth dimension.
You smell like coconut.
I smell like...
And disappointment.
Cocaine.
That was tried in the 50s. Smell-o-vision and Aroma-rama.
Robert Rodriguez is bringing it back in a big, bad way.
Spy Kids 4D.
Stop making movies, Robert Rodriguez.
And if you watch the trailer for that, I think it's so funny because people know now that 3D means an upcharge.
Yeah.
You are assured during the trailer that that card is absolutely free. You're not going to have to pay more for the smelly card.
In the spirit of Robert Rodriguez, can you please call me Lava Girl for the rest of the podcast?
I will. I was going to refer to you and JB as the Boondork Saints.
That's right.
My college nickname was Shark Girl.
Shark Boy.
Shark Boy.
Yeah, and he's Lava Girl.
Yeah, so, you know, together we make an unstoppable team.
He's called that because he only uses lava soap.
He was, Robert Rodriguez, to his credit, was slightly ahead of the 3D curve. Not that the movies were any good. But anyway, we're talking about this summer.
Yeah.
The best summer in movie history? Question mark? Upwards inflection?
Who said that?
Me just now?
Wait, are you asking us if you just said that right now? Or?
Are you suggesting that?
I'm not suggesting that at all.
Has anyone suggested that?
I'm sure someone has. I haven't heard it or spoken to someone who said that.
Here's who suggested that.
All right.
The accountants at movie studios.
Perhaps.
Yeah.
Michael Bay.
The guy from Disney who said that we don't need scripts.
Optimorse Prime, that guy, that douche. Yeah. So we're talking about...
We could put out anything and they line up.
The summer, and that was very much proven to be the case this summer, which, you know, last year we did a summer show and we talked about, man, this was kind of a bad summer for movies. And yet, looking back at last summer, it was so much better, I think, because A, there were some truly great movies that came out last summer, and B, there was some... variety, and I feel like both of those things were completely lacking this summer. I can think of one movie that I saw that I loved, I can think of one movie I saw that I liked, and everything else is shades of eh.
So tonight's just going to be a long podcast version of F, Marry, Kill
Correct.
For summer movies.
Correct.
Okay. That's a good idea. In much the same way that the fall has become award season.
Yes.
It seems as if they're target marketing in such a narrow way that summer is becoming 3D blockbusters, comedies, often romantic comedies, and children's films.
Yeah.
It seems like other genres are getting...
Right, and they try and do like some counter-programming each summer, and this year I think the counter-programming was Midnight in Paris and Tree of Life. Both movies that I saw, one of which I liked better than the other.
I don't think we've discussed Tree of Life yet.
I don't think we have either.
It's been discussed on a podcast before, I think.
I think Alex mentioned it when he saw it.
Oh, okay.
I haven't talked about seeing it, I don't think, because I don't really need to. I liked Midnight in Paris of those two movies.
Okay, I thought it was that I was not a Terrence Malick fan.
I kind of am, and I was not a Tree of Life fan.
But that film spins you around, and what is it? It's an old saying.
Spins you right round.
Punches
baby.
You.
Right round.
That to show you the ins and outs. Was it a good touch or a bad touch? To show you the ins and outs of this family with dysfunction, he goes back to the beginning of time.
Right.
This is like asking someone what time it is, and they tell you how to build a clock.
High points for the summer. Let's jump in right there. Doug, what was your high point for the summer?
Oh, wow. Me?
Yeah, you.
I loved Super 8.
Yes.
I'm going to steal your thunder every single step of the way. I also...
What was your favorite thing that you saw this summer?
Either Super 8 or Captain America. I really liked Captain America. I haven't seen, and again, this is the dumb caveat I give at every podcast that I do with you, Patrick, is I'm not very smart. I spell smart. SMRT. I smell smart. I spell smart.
You do smell smart.
Thank you.
Yeah.
You dress smartly.
It's my new cologne, SMRT. I haven't seen nearly as many of the movies that you guys have, but I have seen, I try to see all the tentpole movies. I say tentpole like it's, by the way, this whole notion of tentpole movies, I'm offended because it's now part of our lexicon.
And by that he means movies about tentpoles, which I avoid because they're all so boring.
No, I saw
how
this
many
one movie,
tentpoles
I saw
can you
this
see?
One movie about tentpoles that turned into robots.
And I saw one movie this summer with tentpoles, Water for Elephants, about which the less said the better.
So that being said, I think I'm offended that tentpole has even become a thing that we're now, like, it's so like, well, that's a tentpole movie. And it's just such a category now that's kind of sprung up. And so many of the stuff does fall in that category, unfortunately, which means to me it's like it's a big, John pointed out earlier, like the blockbuster movies, the big budget, whatever, the spectacles. But also now this kind of sub-definition that they don't really have great stories, that they're just all based on... like, you know, just the spectacle of the picture.
Or what I've come to call boom, boom, boom. Because as everyone listening to this podcast has experienced, my wife and I went to see Our Idiot Brother, which is a relatively quiet film. And because we're at the multiplex...
The walls are shaking.
Oh,
and what's,
my
whatever's
God.
Playing next
oh,
wow.
What the hell movie is next door?
I have to assume... Assume... I can't. Can we start over, by the way?
Yeah, no problem.
When you assume and then scream because of your assumption.
I have to assume it was Battle Los Angeles.
No, that's been out of theaters.
Man, I am out of it. Skyline?
Honest,
was it Skyline?
No, it hasn't. I mean, yes, Battle Los Angeles has been out of theaters. It's just called something else now, and it's playing on six different screens.
Boom, boom, boom. Because I finally broke down, loyal podcast listeners. And I never thought it would happen, but... I went to see Transformers 3.
Your love of the patio theater trumped...
Dark Night of my soul. Yeah. And I can't figure it out. I cannot figure it out for the life of me. I cannot understand the popularity of that film. But my lovely wife earlier today suggested something that might go really far in explaining why the movie's so popular. It looks and seems expensive.
Yeah.
And people like expensive things.
That's true. That's absolutely true. And that's such a weird phenomenon, too, because, you know, all three of those movies have made insane amounts of money, but I don't think you could find anyone who can say that they liked either of the second two. Like, everybody sees them, nobody likes them.
Well, then maybe that's the problem, because I cleverly missed the first two and saw part three, but weren't people saying that part three saved the franchise or something?
It was better than the second one, but for some reason that first movie, the first Transformers, even from people who shit on the second two, like, gets a pass. People are like, well, the first one's good. No, it isn't. We have to stop accepting that as some sort of fact. Like, the
summer,
first one's not good.
The summer that the first one came out, I remember because you talked about this a lot.
Yes.
This phenomenon of people saying it was the best movie they had ever seen.
Yes.
Which leads me to believe that they've never seen a movie?
I don't know. I don't know. I felt like... Mike brought this up at the end of last week's podcast that we did on Star Trek, where he said, boy, if you had told me when I was 10 years old that one day, you know, every week we'd be getting a movie based on Transformers or comic book characters or Star Trek or whatever, I would be so excited for that day to come, and that day is here, and like I couldn't be more just jaded and burned out by it. Every week is this like event movie, and I'm exhausted. I mean, movies that I should in theory be excited to see, I dread their release because I just know that it's going to bore me and disappoint me, and I just want to see something good. It's been a long time since I've seen something really good.
Well, in a weird way, now that there's so many comic book movies, I almost feel like the bar has been set higher because we've seen so many bad ones. And maybe in a while we can address the lantern problem.
The Transformers 3 thing, though, just quickly, I saw Transformers 3 with JB, and it was horrible, obviously. But after I saw it, I did a lot of reading. I was very curious as to this phenomenon of Michael Bay and the history of the trilogy and things like that. And to your guys' point that the movie was better, in quotes, in vigorous air quotes. It was better than Transformers 2, which is kind of widely considered to be horrible.
Right.
And as Patrick points out, well, let's not forget the first one's also a piece of shit. And also, the third one sucks too. But the third one is supposedly so much better, it saves, but it also, it made so much money, but was a disappointment compared to the second one, which I thought was interesting. By the way, we're talking, it still made millions,
right,
hundreds
right.
of millions of dollars.
Right.
But given how much it cost, there's an upcharge for IMAX and 3D. Even with those upcharges, it still was less money than Revenge of the Fallen, which is the second one. And it's just, they're all
And
messes.
I have to believe that some of that is because people hated the second one so much that maybe some people decided to stay away.
Yeah, but
like,
something you said earlier, too, is like, everyone saw it, but no one loved it. I think when you say no one, you really have to kind of, you know, explain that comment. Meaning, like, no one, the people that we might read or talk to, and granted, we're not talking to 12-year-olds, typically, or 13-year-olds who don't have movie blogs or don't write for AV Club or
right.
whatever else. I really do think that a lot of people still love these movies. And
yeah, they must, but it, like, even when the first one came out, people were talking about it.
Oh, okay.
Like, just, I would go to a party or go to a somewhere, and people were talking about the first movie, and nobody really was talking about this movie. Like,
and because I teach film, a lot of people ask me questions about movies and stuff.
Have you seen this?
Exactly.
Did you see this?
And
everything's
me,
from the last 5 years, right?
Let me let you borrow a DVD, which I will then require you to watch by right. hounding you every day and asking you if you watched it yet. But this summer, from friends and family members, I got a lot of, have you seen the new Transformers
really?
Movie? They were wondering. And my response was, do you know me? Do you know me at all? But going back to what you said previously, it reminded me of something P.J. O'Rourke used to say about the National Lampoon magazine, that it's not the issue that sells the issue. It's the last issue that sells
right.
the issue.
Right.
Sure.
That if I buy it and I like it, I'm going to be more likely to buy the next one. And maybe that's what happened with Transformers.
And that's what's going on with all these tentpole movies. And that's what I don't understand. You know, it used to be like you would make a movie and you would try and make a good movie. And then if the movie was good and made a bunch of money, someone would say, let's try and make another one and recapture that success, usually with diminishing returns. But, like, that's not the goal anymore. The goal now is just let's set up a franchise. Let's establish an opportunity to make more movies. I mean, the weekend Green Lantern came out and was, by all accounts, a failure financially, critically. No one liked that movie. It lost the studio maybe $100 million. And already Warner Brothers is like, but we're going to get it right on the next one. Well, don't make a next one.
That's insane.
Your first one was terrible.
And
Wheels tracks.
After I saw Captain America with Doug, it just struck me as so odd, maybe because we had both seen Green Lantern at the same theater, how one film could get it so right and another film could get it so wrong. I mean, Green Lantern is interminable and awful and cliched and one-dimensional, and there's not one memorable line of dialogue. And of course, my single favorite shot in a movie this summer, when we see the science building. And on the side of the building, it says, science building. Oh, we're in generic world. We're
it
in
was,
generic
I was
world
with
now.
JB in the theater. He laughed very loud at that.
I may be going out on too far of a limb here, but I was not a fan of Transformers 3, but
you're going out on a limb?
I would say it was not the worst movie I saw this summer.
Oh, okay.
I think I liked Green Lantern even less, because while Transformers was terrible, aggressively terrible, A, it did show me a few things, and maybe it's because I saw it in the IMAX and the 3D and all that nonsense. There were a few moments where it showed me something I hadn't seen in a movie before.
Like your house, because it was shot in Chicago?
Correct.
Like,
that's
I live
one
there.
Thing.
I live in that robot.
Even just the guys jumping out of the planes with the wingsuits. Like,
yeah.
That's neat. Never seen that in a movie.
When that came on the screen, that made me laugh, too.
Well, it's none of it makes any sense. Like, how do we beat giant robots? Well, we'll get up into planes and jump down in wingsuits.
We should take a tip from our friend the flying squirrel.
So it didn't make any sense, but
my knowledge of Rocky and Bullwinkle will help the human race. Before we leave Transformers 3.
What I'm saying is I liked Green Lantern even less.
This,
it's like, yeah.
I have to reiterate this.
Degrees of poo.
Although it was, Dennis Miller used to say, when you... why don't I remember that bringing up Dennis Miller will make Patrick bob his head and do his...
That's like the Ottoman Empire. Something.
Dennis Miller used to say this about two-for-one sales. I got news for you. Two of shit is still shit.
Yeah.
If they really want to screw you, they'll give you three of these. Doug put this in his column, but I want to reiterate it because I think it's the single funniest thing I've heard in a movie theater this summer. We go see Transformers 3. It is awful. It is indescribably awful. It's awful in every conceivable way. And then about halfway through it, Buzz Aldrin shows up. And, oh, really? Really? And Doug leans over and says...
That was a great joke.
Buzz Aldrin desperately needs medication that only Michael Bay has.
That was a great joke.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Everybody read Watching Trailers with Doug.
Starring me,
also
Doug.
Shitting on the Classics with JB.
Oh. I dug it.
Before Patrick,
I'm making that happen.
Before Patrick mentioned counter programming, and I don't think this film is for everyone, but it did come out in the summer, and I was surprised that it got out to the suburbs. Cave of Forgotten Dreams.
Oh yeah,
and I know it has a pace that puts some people off.
What a forgotten who?
Cave
Never heard of it.
Of Forgotten Dreams. It's a documentary.
Narrated by
Morgan Freeman.
Hugo Weaving as the Red Skull.
Nice.
Werner Herzog, which already is becoming this thing on the internet, imitating his voice, because he has this very distinctive, very interesting voice. But
Vi Cookie Rocket. Is that Werner Herzog?
Like some earlier films by Errol Morris, I thought the pace was justified because it sort of gives you time to meditate, and I thought the film was on a big subject. It is the only film I've ever seen that sort of justifies its 3D,
because
he wanted you to be aware of the topography of the caves.
I hate to... What's it about?
It's a film about some of the oldest...
Also Forgotten
drawings.
Dreams.
Two things mainly.
Wait, what's it about? I forgot. I must have dreamt it. I have no joke for Cave. I'm thinking of a joke for the preposition of. In a cave in France, they found drawings that are the oldest known.
Sorry, this
human
is just.
Drawings.
By the way, I'm here just to learn. Apparently,
and it's an extraordinary film. It's certainly not the typical suburban, the typical summer film. I was surprised that it got out to the suburbs. It was a highlight of the summer.
Yeah.
What I've noticed, going back to, you said before that the summer, I think you said it, JB, about summer, like, big blockbusters, rom-coms, as I call them, romantic comedies for the uneducated, and something else. You said something else. But
Children's
yes.
Yeah.
But even with the romantic comedy, the new twist on it the last couple of years has been the R-rated kind of like...
Especially this summer.
Hangover 2 and Bridesmaids and, you know...
Horrible Bosses.
Horrible Bosses.
Bad Teacher.
Right.
The Change Up.
And they're doing well, which, you know, it's funny. Flashback to 5-6 years ago, even longer, 10 years ago, and our rating seems to have made everything that comes out PG-13, meaning like it's... The R rating obviously is limited audience. It doesn't make as much money. So everything that should be R... That's put out comedies, what have you. They dumb it down or they dilute it so it's PG-13 to make it for all audiences. You want to say something?
But that's interesting because my reaction to all of these R-rated comedies is that either I'm getting diluted or jaded as I get older, or my memory is not right, or I'm a dirty old man. But none of them seem particularly dirty to me. Especially compared to R-rated films of 10 or 20 years ago.
Right.
Maybe
20 and 30 years ago, too. Even like the Porky's and all that. Those
and that's
of...
the film I was thinking of, because that film is really raunchy in a lot of ways, and filmmakers don't go in that direction anymore.
No.
But I was thinking about Horrible Bosses, which is a recent R-rated comedy. And I thought that other than the spectacle of seeing Jennifer Aniston sort of demean herself in that role.
That's a good way to put it.
And saying things out loud that we've never seen that actress say, I didn't find anything about the movie was particularly...
No, just some language and like Jason Sudeikis put something in his butt, but there's nothing.
What I find interesting though is, and again, just my stupid point is that, you know, 10 years ago, we're like, everything is PG-13. There's nothing made for adults. I'm an adult. I want to see something that's R. I want to see something that makes me think or that challenges me or that makes me laugh because it's so absurd that it has to be R. And here we are, much to Patrick's point about how you and Mike talked about the notion of superhero movies
right.
and Star Trek and all this great stuff.
So
that's
now you
out.
Got your wish.
Right, and here we are that everything is so borderline R. I remember Wedding Crashers when that came out. It's like, this is going to be a raunchy
right.
throwback. And there's a scene, a montage, where they're bedding women and these models that aren't the main characters are falling backwards topless with their fake breasts. And it's not even sexy. There's nothing even, it's just, it's a weird, quick, well, we can put tits in here, so we're going to
right.
put tits in here. And this is the point, at the 18-minute mark is where the tits go.
It's the romantic comedy version of Boom, Boom, Boom.
I made Boom, Boom, Boom earlier.
Yeah, kind of. It has nothing to do with the content, and it has everything to do with that we can market this movie
right.
as an R-rated comedy. And The Change-Up in particular, which did end up bombing, all these other movies made over $100 million.
Which
every one of these R-rated
right.
comedies.
So it's...
In the promotional materials for The Change-Up.
It was like a talking point. Jason Bateman would go out and do press. He'd have to say...
This has been done before, but never in an R-rated way. Winkety,
right.
winkety, wink.
Right.
Boom, boom,
they
boom.
Were really trying to push the R rating, and that was the only time it backfired, because everything else
right.
made over $100
So the whole
million.
Point is, we've got R-rated movies. As JB says, they're not R, really. I don't feel like they're... Maybe if I was watching it with, like, a five-year-old, I'd be like, oh, earmuffs
yeah, right,
or whatever,
right.
but...
I mean, think about how transgressive something like Animal House still seems
right.
in a lot of ways.
Or even Fast Times. There's, like, an abortion. There's
yeah,
the girl
right.
coming out, you
right.
know, the great scene with What's-Her-Face.
A generation of young men have gone steady with that scene.
Oh, God.
And they're remote.
A terrible summer, I think, for comedy. I mean, for every genre, I think it was a terrible summer. But comedies, and we had a bunch of them, but none of them were very good. Horrible Bosses was actually one of the ones I liked better than... I liked Bridesmaids.
Bridesmaids was... I was going to say, that's the
and
one
I liked
high
Horrible
point
Bosses
of the
because
comedies.
I think my expectations were low. But
and I give Bridesmaids a lot of credit because you don't see... films doing this anymore. The last time was Space Cowboys. Bridesmaids. Boy,
hold on.
Like, yeah, just how do you like how I pulled that one out of my butt? Because
Bridesmaids rides a rocket to the moon.
Because
we're
space,
going on almost 100 shows. No Space Cowboys references.
When Space Cowboys came out, it did something.
I can't wait to see where this goes.
It made Doug leave after a half hour.
Really? Did you walk out?
I thought I stayed till the end.
Did you?
I might have left and come back.
I thought you left. I thought you were like, I'm taking off.
I think it might be my tremendous affection for
was
the
it,
actors in the film.
Was okay. it Clint Eastwood? Like, the end, he's like outside the rocket and like sits on the rocket as the rocket goes into... Isn't that how the movie ends?
No. That's crazy talk.
Maybe I did leave and dreamt it in my cave of
forgotten dreams. When Space Cowboys came out, it was clearly in the world of modern movie marketing, and it did something that no film had done for like 10 years, and I don't think any film has done since. It made more money in its second weekend than in its first.
Hmm.
And at the time, I was teaching class, and I suggested, this is because this movie is pitched to an audience that's underserved, older people who have busy lives and can't get to the theater the first weekend, and who rely on word of mouth.
Right.
Boy, that was a really good old-fashioned film.
Right.
It made more money in its second week than in its first, and more money in its third week than in its second.
Wow.
And that never happens anymore. And what I noticed this summer with Bridesmaids is it just stayed in the theater.
Right.
People just reliably kept going to see it, and that does not happen anymore.
I saw it second run at the Patio in Chicago. It was still playing first run theaters when
right.
I saw it second run. And the second run theater was pretty crowded. And I also think, to your point, I think that some of the underserved audiences, I know even I'm at the point now where I'm not going to see something opening night unless I really am like dying to see something, just because I cannot stand to be in a crowded theater. I mean, something like Harry Potter, which, oh, that was something, that's another movie that I really, really liked this summer. But something like Harry Potter that I really wanted to see, I made the sacrifice to go with all these kids or whatever. But otherwise, I'm like, I'm fine to wait 5 weeks. I don't need to see it right away.
I wonder, too, if Bridesmaids, and I liked Bridesmaids, but I wonder how much of its success or how much goodwill we have towards it has to do with where it was placed in the summer, too. Because it was very early, and everybody's sort of in the mood to kick off the summer movie season. And it's funny, had it come out in, like, at the end of July, would it have been as popular?
No.
And that's certainly a phenomenon I see, like, with Thor, which made a bunch of money, and which, when I saw it, I was like, I liked Thor. I have completely forgotten Thor. If Thor had come out 2 months later, no one would have cared, I don't think. But it was the first one out of the gate for the summer, unless you go back a week further to, like, Fast Five, which came out at the end of April, you know, because it keeps moving up.
And my guess was that the people responsible were really scared by Transformers, because as the summer went on, not only in terms of possibly making more money, but it's a match made in heaven. I cannot figure out why they didn't release Captain America on 4th of July weekend.
Yeah, yeah. I'm sure it's Transformers.
You know, this summer also is the first summer in movie history where three movies each made $1 billion.
Harry Potter, Transformers,
and Pirates of the Caribbean.
Oh, yeah, right.
Which are those, are like, the, again, going back to this tentpole film phenomenon, you've got three movies by themselves, and again, they're franchises, there's built-in audiences, they're making $1 billion apiece. So if nothing else, what I take from this is we're just going to get way more of this in the future.
Well, and Pirates of the Caribbean, too, is another one of these situations where everybody saw it, nobody liked it, and that's a movie...
Except Dean Richards from WGN, that asshole.
That's a movie...
See Doug's previous column.
That's a movie that made the majority of its money overseas.
And oh, really?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it did fine here, but it made a bunch of money overseas.
And mostly in the Caribbean.
So now I
wonder... like the Johnny Depp. Please note, that was meant to be an ethnic accent of unknown derivation, so it can't be racist.
I got a Johnny Depp. Who ordered a Johnny Depp?
We
so now
like
I
the
wonder
Johnny Depp.
If we're going to see more movies, not necessarily like Pirates of the Caribbean.
With Johnny Depp?
But more movies, and I mean, I think it's happened already, but more movies that are geared towards like a global audience, where you need very specific elements, and you don't have to speak the language to follow what's going on.
Right, well, and that's, again, speaks to that Disney chief.
Right.
And granted, this guy that it works for Disney is not the creative guy. He was some back-end business person. But a person who works for Disney said, story doesn't matter. These tentpole movies don't need, it doesn't matter. And it's just, it's infuriating because you're right. It's all about like, well, he's swashbuckling on a thing and he lands on the ship and that guy's the bad guy because he's, and oh, by the way, what movie, oh, Rise of the Apes.
Yeah.
Rise
of the Planet of the Apes.
Yes. It is way better than it has any right to be. I'm kidding. But we know, like, you can watch that movie with the sound off.
Right.
And know when John Lithgow has Alzheimer's and when he doesn't, based on the mussiness of his hair.
When he has also, when the medication's not, when the treatment's not working, his hair is messy. He must have Alzheimer's.
I mean, no joke, because it's like he, no spoilers for Planet of the Apes, but he has Alzheimer's and then he's kind of cured, then he gets it back, and his hair goes from messy to thicker glasses too, by the way, to him playing the piano like clean cut, and then back to, it was even the scene, like, before it's even revealed to the audience that Alzheimer's is kicked back in, you and I turn to each other, we're in the theater, and it's like,
plus he was, like, holding his fork backwards.
That's right, and the fucking ape. Oh, man. I didn't hate that movie when I left it.
This sounds like they might have borrowed this trope from, one, the first Hulk movie, where depending on how crazy Nick Nolte's hair is, that's how crazy he is. Or, what we theorized were reshoots on the Wolfman remake, where Anthony Hopkins' hair does this wacky thing, where they really slick back, crazy, which, both, neither, okay.
We forget what it looked like before. It's not like we filmed it. We can't reconstruct
it. Which points out what the Wolfman remake desperately needed, apes.
More movies this summer could have used apes. Again, looking back to last summer, we were hard on last summer, but you had Inception, and then you had smaller movies like Please Give coming out. You had the big children's movie was Toy Story 3. Like, this year it was
Cars 2.
And if you didn't see that, maybe you saw The Smurfs, both of which are just cynical, awful movies.
And speaking of Cars 2, because I know you saw it.
Yeah, I did.
Because you kind of had to.
Yeah.
And luckily I escaped that. But you said something after you saw the film that I thought was so interesting, because as the summer went on, and different people, like the woman who cuts my hair and things, found out that, like, I like movies, and I go to a lot of movies, and I'm on this website for movies, and I teach film, people began to ask me questions about Cars 2, about plot points that they couldn't figure out, because I guess some of it's inscrutable.
Well, they're cars who are spies in Japan. I don't know what else you need to know.
Wait, I thought the cars in Cars 2 were robots in disguise.
It's a movie for no one because the humor is pitched at sort of the Larry the Cable Guy, like, bidet for a car jokes, you know? Like, we're going to shoot water up into your asshole. I don't know. Like,
hey, car butthole!
And so I guess that's funny for kids, but then the kids can't follow the plot because it's about this espionage and...
Start over.
Alternative fuel.
There were cars... All things kids are fascinated by. And there were some cars...
This is a flex fuel machine?
And people couldn't figure out what side
right.
certain cars were on. So they were asking me, who had not seen the film.
Is ethanol the villain in this movie or not?
It just really seemed like John Lasseter was really... I mean, I thought the first Cars movie was sort of self-indulgent in terms of like what he is obsessed with or passionate about. And this movie to me felt even more, I guess, self-indulgent. But, you know, this movie was more about selling toys, and it's really the first time that that's true of the Pixar movies.
And Doug, to answer your question, the villain is always big government.
The man.
Always. Corporations.
The government.
In kids' movies are always the villains.
Now, Cars 2, I know Pixar is not famous, but they're known for like being movies for both kids and adults right. without pandering.
And they have very high quality control.
Right.
Except for the Cars movie.
Now, my question is, in Toy Story 3, they're not making jokes that only I get, and this kid next to me is so dumb he doesn't understand it. It was, you know, jokes that were just smarter and
right.
clever.
Right.
Cars 2 is not, they go for the, they pander? Is that what I'm gathering?
Oh, yeah. All of the jokes are sort of bathroom related.
You know,
like,
JB and I had a conversation after watching a movie, and it was about a trailer for Puss in Boots. Have you talked about that before on the podcast?
Not on the podcast. We've
Please,
talked about it
JB,
personally.
Tell me what, I mean, like, it's so...
It's the end of civilization.
Everything is the end of civilization.
Because, again...
Is this podcast?
There's such a big difference between a great children's film and a really horrible children's film. In Up, we get something that's very funny.
Wife dying? That was not... You read that scene entirely wrong.
Then you haven't met my wife.
Spoiler alert. Oh, my God.
I love you, honey.
It's sort of become a thing
Don't
on the Daily listen. Show now. The way that a dog will be talking to you,
right.
and then, squirrel! John Stewart has compared the American media to the dog, specifically in covering the Republican candidates. Back to my point. Shrek has spun off a new film, which is coming out this fall, and it's called Puss in Boots, with Antonio Banderas doing the voice. And Patrick and I had commented on this before. Whenever you go to a children's film, like Winnie the Pooh, which was wonderful.
Yeah, that's right. You're
forced to sit through these trailers for other lesser films with pee-pee and poo-poo and farty, 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 pee-pee, poo-poo. And it just makes you despair. The Puss in Boots trailer has a joke that's unfathomable if you consider that this is a film for children. Puss in Boots... hooks up with Humpty Dumpty. They're perpetrating some sort of crime. At one point, Humpty Dumpty has second thoughts and says, "You don't know what it's like for an egg in prison. I'll tell you one thing, it ain't over easy." Oh my God!
So that...
What are you thinking?
Butt sex?
And at that point, that's what your son turns
right.
to you and asks.
Right,
right.
But again, I think these parents maybe, and I'm not a parent, I don't know, but it's maybe they don't care. They take their kids to see stuff. It's a cartoon. It's 90 minutes.
That's going to get again, we're talking more about like sort of these trends than we are the movies themselves. But like
that
joke is going to get certain adults into the theater with their kids because like
be something that I can enjoy
exactly, and if
anal
you see
rape
right. And they'll show that trailer in front of a movie that isn't a children's film. Sometimes, like, if you go see something in IMAX, they just show trailers for
right.
everything that's going to come out in IMAX 3D, and that's one of them. So you get the Puss in Boots trailer, and without fail, you know, there's going to be a group of adults that laugh at that line.
Well, we talked about this even earlier tonight, that we're so trained as a culture, and this is nothing new, and this might sound really dumb, but we're so trained as a culture, to not laugh at what people are saying, but to go along with cadence and
right.
and beats. If
it's timed like a joke.
If it feels like a joke and there's a beat and a punchline, audiences will laugh. And, you know, you've got the America's Funniest Home, AFV, sorry, not America's Funniest Home Videos, the AFV audiences that just laugh at stuff. You've got people like my mom, who I love, but laughs at everything, every commercial. My mom is the best. We should have her here right now because she would be laughing her butt off at everything we're saying. And that's the thing. It's like it doesn't need to be a joke or clever, but if, like, adults register that's something for me that's structured like a joke, I'm going to laugh right now so I can fit in with my cabal of idiots.
And I forgot Winnie the Pooh. I thought of it while we were talking about Cars 2, but at the start of the show when I said I saw one movie that I loved and one movie that I liked, I forgot Winnie the Pooh. I saw two movies that I loved because I really loved Winnie the Pooh. I'm pretty sure it's one of my favorite movies this year, and it is the opposite of the children's films that we're talking about.
How did it do?
Not well.
So, like, goodbye, you know, it's
Well, and goodbye, just, Shell Animation, goodbye.
Yeah, that's,
You know, Winnie the Pooh, they're not going to try and make another Winnie the Pooh movie for maybe 20 years, because, oh, kids don't want to see that. They want to see Smurfs.
It's gentle, and it takes its time.
But it's also funny.
Yeah.
In a way that, like, could be funny for kids or adults that doesn't rely on pop culture references. It's just about wordplay and characters, and it's really,
and
really
Pooh
wonderful.
And Pooh is very cute, and he wants some honey.
Right.
Everyone can identify with that.
I thought it was great, and it was the only good kids movie to come out this summer, and it made, I don't know, 1/5 of what the Smurfs and Cars 2 both made.
And as you point out, and again, I hate to be so self-referential, but we talked about this before, too. Who is the Smurfs for? No kid alive that's under 15. The Smurfs weren't around. I barely remember the Smurfs. I'm in my 30s. So it's people that are my age or a little older that watched this when they were kids, taking their kids to see. But it's like,
because just like Hollywood has seized on the fact that very often the girl or the woman in a couple will make the movie decision for the evening.
Mm.
These kids are going to movies, but it's the parents who have to pay.
Yeah.
And I think that's the first step toward the whole pre-sold thing, that you remember this. At least you know what a Smurf is.
Everything has to be a brand. Yeah.
And that gets you into the theater.
And the success of the Smurfs means that they've already greenlighted a Hong Kong Phooey movie voiced by Eddie Murphy. Who's that for? I mean, that wasn't even on when we were kids.
They're for fans of Pluto Nash. Is that who
I mean, Yogi Bear made money. The Smurfs made money. So now any old Hanna-Barbera
cartoon.
I honestly
don't even remember Hong Kong Phooey.
Because it wasn't on.
No, because that was my generation.
Right.
That was on when I was like 10.
And your generation, you know, doesn't necessarily have young kids right now.
And
so who's it for?
Back then. Okay, here's the marketing strategy.
Yeah.
Men of my age.
Yes.
A certain age.
Who have divorced and are now having another string of kids with the trophy wife.
And that's where
perhaps
the money is.
Yeah, my son, there was a Hong Kong Phooey on the TV set.
How do we get the divorced dads?
I'm taking you.
You just talked about
your mother wants to go to the spa.
Women making the choices for what movies will be seen, which is a perfect segue into this summer's romantic comedies. And there were only 3 or 4, and they were all fairly terrible.
I could not fathom the positive reviews that Crazy Stupid Love garnered. Because, in a weird way, like Larry Crown, which was awful, Crazy Stupid Love doesn't take place on the planet Earth. It's a weird, backwards, crazy world where there's only one bar and everybody helps each other. And at the end, when all the plot threads come together, people start hitting each other and falling over.
Right. That's funny. No, that movie got sort of universally praised, even by people who should know better, and people were saying, it's the romantic comedy for people who don't like romantic comedies. No, it isn't. It had a good cast. It was photographed well. Those are the two good things I could say about it, because to be honest, I think I liked Larry Crown better than Crazy Stupid Love, because I think, A, Larry Crown just had Tom Hanks, and I'd rather watch Tom Hanks for 2 hours than Steve Carell playing another mope. But I think Larry Crown was also a little bit more upfront about taking place in a universe that is manufactured. I think Crazy Stupid Love really tried to sell you that, like, this is what life is truly like. And I think Larry Crown at least set up a fake world that it lived in.
I will give Larry Crown this tiny compliment. When I saw it, I thought this was kind of funny. Cedric the Entertainer plays a man who's having a permanent garage sale.
Right.
It's constantly up and running. And this summer, I slowly came to the realization that one of my neighbors is doing the same thing.
Yeah, I wish that that joke was sort of born out of, like, human observation, but it's just another... Every character in that movie has a quirk. I'm the one who's in the scooter gang. Yeah. I'm the one who's addicted to online bikini videos.
And unfortunately...
I'm the one who always has the garage sale.
And unfortunately, that quirk crashes into another quirk. He won on a game show.
Right.
So
he doesn't have to work, so that's why he's always home having a permanent garage sale.
Because you'll notice that most lottery winners...
Makes sense.
Yeah.
Start having garage sales. It's what they've always dreamed of.
Larry Crown was so frustrating to me because I felt like it was, you know, maybe two rewrites away, not from being good, but from resembling a movie, because it has so many problems, starting with just, I don't even know what the movie wants to be about, really. And Larry Crown is a kid. I mean, in theory, it's about this guy who loses his job and goes back to school as an adult and sort of what that experience is like. But the movie's not really interested in being about that at all.
Because those scenes are hard to write about what education is and how you gain education and how it changes you. So at the end of the film, we're supposed to assume that all these students have been magically changed, but they haven't.
Right.
And Julia Roberts is lauded as some super teacher, but she's an awful teacher.
Right, and kind of an awful person. And Larry Crown himself... Again, if you're going to have a movie that's sort of built around this one character to the extent that, you know, it's the title of your movie, that character should be interesting or dynamic. But instead, Larry Crown is just sort of this empty vessel who is acted upon for the entire movie.
Yeah.
And never actually does anything for himself. He just follows orders from the people around him and is sort of shaped into this one thing. But that's not the message of the movie either.
And what Patrick is saying is true to such an unbelievable degree that there are moments in the film where he comes across as mentally challenged.
Yeah, well, especially early on.
That someone who had reached his age with the backstory they give him in the film, he was in the military.
Mm-hmm.
Really? Really? You need to be told that. What is it about the American public that likes the man-child?
I don't know.
Because in a weird way, I agree with you, Carell is playing Mopey Mopey way too much, but Carell in that movie is also the man-child.
Yeah.
You have a job and kids.
But see, he's been married, so he hasn't been in the real world. That's the assumption, sort of, that you're married, you're in this weird shelter where, like, you wear gym shoes to dinner, and you don't know how the world works anymore, because you're in your marriage bubble.
How quickly is Steve Carell's stock plummeting? Is my question.
I don't know that it is.
I only say this because I have not seen Crazy Stupid Love.
It's so good. You should see it. It's the romantic comedy for people who don't like romantic
comedies.
But
you just said, I should go see it.
Yes.
But I thought you said, but you think I should go see it?
It's very romantic and very funny.
I never laughed less.
I recently saw, and these are not obviously summer movies, but I recently saw Dinner for Schmucks and Date Night. I saw them within the last 3 months on HBO. They are so boring and just horrible, and not even horrible. Just like, what am I? It's just nothing. It's
right.
Nothing. I'm watching nothing.
You know, and this gets back to our earlier point about R-rated comedies. Dinner for Schmucks, that is an intriguing premise.
Yeah.
Well, it's a remake of a French movie or something.
Yeah.
That's like.
But that's a premise of a very dark, very mean-spirited film.
Yes.
Which Dinner for Schmucks had no interest in being.
No. And so I watch it, and again, I haven't seen Crazy Stupid Love, although I did talk about the trailer, and the trailer actually looked good for it, but I think they probably pulled the three lines that were kind of funny.
Right.
You know.
And it had people in it that you like, and so it's like, oh.
Yeah. Right, well, that's the whole thing. It's
right.
Like, now we're going to cast everyone, and Steve Carell, and I I'm sorry for going on this tangent, I recently saw Cedar Rapids, which is also not a summer movie, but did come out in 2011, and it's the same thing. Ed Helms is playing this mope. They're sweetly retarded.
Right.
And as Patrick says, we know our own. But it's like, this guy is so, and just like Steve Carell, they're so not skilled in anything. They can't talk to people. They can't get their point across. And it reminds me of, like, Meet the Parents, where it's like, no, just explain yourself, and you'll save me 90 minutes of not caring about you.
Ebert used to call that the idiot plot, the plot that would be instantly resolved if everyone in the film were not idiots. Speaking of all these comedies that we're talking about.
And by the way, sorry, those are not summer movies. F those movies.
Crazy Stupid Love, Date Night, Dinner for Schmucks, Horrible Bosses, Larry Crown.
30 minutes or less?
All 30 minutes or less, which I thought, like, A Little Help had a real problem with tone. That's a very tricky thing to keep in the air. But all these comedies that we're mentioning pale. No, wait, wrong verb. Hold on. I have a film that makes all of the films we've been talking about look like masterpieces.
Oh.
And it came out this summer. And you know what it was called. Because it's called Zookeeper.
I was
going
to say, does it feature animals that can talk?
Wait a minute. No. Like an ape that could say no.
Yeah.
Like, my name is Caesar.
Yeah.
With
he's like, why Cookie Rocket? Let's go to Fridays.
And so they do.
With
Circus Monkey at Fridays.
With celebrities doing the voices. And so you can tell whose celebrity voice is really distinctive. Nick Nolte.
Yeah.
And whose voice isn't distinctive at all. So you sit there through the whole movie, and because there's no entertainment in the movie at all, it becomes a game. Okay, that's Nick Nolte. Okay, that's Sylvester Stallone. Okay,
Maya Rudolph, Sandler, yeah. Maya Rudolph.
The one voice I couldn't get until the end credits was Cher.
Yeah.
Completely.
Yeah.
Well, it goes back. I mean, you probably no.
Just talking about
way more
is making you stupider.
I can't. Exactly. Disney movies used to never feature celebrities.
Right.
Even when I was a kid, and I used to love like Beauty and the Beast or Aladdin, and it was all no name. It was, you know, just people who could sing and sounded good and matched their cartoon. And then that was a very slow change.
Aladdin, I think, was the one.
Because they had Robin Williams. But even like the two leads, the Jasmine and Aladdin,
but
were nobodies.
I would argue that Little Mermaid and Beauty and the Beast, that was a very conscious decision. Because Disney, and I read this in a book once that was a history
Books.
Of Disney.
Movies!
Print is dead. That there was a brief period in the 60s where they found themselves going in that area where the character would be a caricature of the actor who had done the voice.
Oh, okay.
And the most egregious example is either Baloo the Bear, who not only sounded but looked exactly like Phil Harris, this famous avuncular actor who played him, or the monkey in Jungle Book that was voiced by Louis Prima and was made to look and act wild like Louis Prima, and that the Disney animators said, that's cheating, that's a shortcut, you should never do that, because it's your job to...
Right, and you've got these 90s movies that are really sweet and beloved and don't have anything, I mean,
Disney's
again...
Disney's second golden age.
Right, and then you've got, and then the slow burn towards where we are now, where everything is, you know, features somebody, and that's, and they put that on the marquee, it's Amy Adams as so-and-so.
Right, and now you get to, like, the Smurfs, which is voiced by, you know, Jonathan Winters and George Lopez, and the voice of Smurfette.
Kids love Jonathan Winters.
The voice of Smurfette is Katy Perry for no reason, because she never sings in the movie.
Because Katy Perry is an excellent singer.
So that when Smurfette makes a reference to, like, I kissed a Smurf and I liked it, who is that for? And what does it mean? What the fuck?
Well, Smurf could be anything. Smurf could be cock.
I know.
I kissed a cock and I liked it.
I know, but like,
Smurf is like,
did she kiss another girl Smurf? There are no other girl Smurfs, but that's what the song's about, right? And do the kids know that song? Do the five-year-olds who are going to see Smurfs know I kissed
a
girl?
You know what? You know what? They do. They might, because these kids are singing these stupid songs that they know better than I do.
That joke
is so grouchy.
That joke is intended for one man watching the film alone in Nebraska. Or when Katy Perry says that, he laughs loud and long and then shouts in the theater, I get it!
But back to Zookeeper, because that was terrible.
Yes. I think that's the worst movie I saw this summer.
Oh, gosh. I have such a hard time choosing.
And I went to see it because I believe I got a text from someone at this table who said, I have to see Zookeeper. Want to lose 2 hours of your life?
Zookeeper's near the bottom. I hated the Smurfs. Transformers 3 was bad.
Green Lantern.
Crazy Stupid Love. I wouldn't even put Larry Crown in the bottom. I really wouldn't, because I just named five movies that I liked less than Larry Crown.
Wow.
There's a few other sort of blockbusters.
I think with Larry Crown, we see a reverse Book of Eli effect. Crown is stultifying.
Yeah.
But as the summer went on,
maybe
there was worse.
Maybe. And so much of it has to do with, I just like...
That's not reverse, that's just
the performers.
that's just the Book of Eli effect.
Oh, wow.
Right, isn't it? Because it's just like, as right. summer goes on, there's such shit that it gets...
Right.
Yeah.
Hmm.
I'm correcting the originator of the...
I guess I've always had a problem with double negatives.
Let's talk about movies that we did like, maybe, or some other blockbusters that we also hated.
I'm...
Like The Hangover 2.
I'm really...
Which I think I'm the only one who saw, right?
I'm really...
Terrible.
I'm really bummed out right now.
Yeah, no, this is a depressing podcast.
This is horrible.
We're talking about this horrible, horrible summer.
I think I want to go home.
There were...
Take my final bath. It's a Patrick joke.
Speaking of final bath, I think it was in a column recently.
Yeah.
You came up with a joke. I think you've used it before.
Okay.
It's really disturbing, and you have to stop using it.
Okay.
You would cry, but...
Oh, I have not used that joke before. I came up with that specifically while writing the column.
Way too dark, or as I like to call them, the noir punchline.
Yeah.
The summer did have occasional moments of wonder. I mentioned Cave of Forgotten Dreams. It was first released in this country this summer, 13 Assassins, which I thought was an amazing film for any number of reasons. Of course, it didn't get out to the suburbs. It only played at one theater in Chicago. And then very quickly went to DVD.
Yeah, it was also available on video on demand.
And it's worth your time. It's, like I said, an amazing film for a number of reasons.
It's currently on Netflix Instant, I believe.
There you go. Even easier. Midnight in Paris, which I loved.
Yeah.
And you loved.
Yes.
And you felt was overpraised.
Yes.
Lately, I've been thinking a lot about Midnight in Paris.
This is where Patrick's wrong and Doug is right.
Because I'm tired of thinking about Zookeeper.
Just me.
I think what might lead you to think that Midnight in Paris was overpraised, because originally when you said that, I agreed with you.
Yeah.
I think saying that, you sort of want it to be a different film than it is. I agree in some sense you could say, he went this far, why didn't he go that far?
Yeah.
But I don't think that he set out to make the film that went that far, and that maybe it was intentional. At this point I'm giving Woody Allen a lot of credit.
Yeah.
That he wanted it to be a trifle, and not, almost to shore up his point that the past is never what we hold it up to be nostalgically.
Yeah.
And so he was deliberately... sort of not going the extra mile of something like The Purple Rose of Cairo.
Yeah, sure. What JB said, totally.
But even that isn't... I mean, that's not necessarily my only problem with the movie. Some of it is just the ending is very rushed and
no.
Character
I think
doesn't work.
I think JB had covered all the bases.
But I like so much of what the movie has to say. I like a lot of the performances. I liked so much of the writing. I had a really good time watching it. And I understand why people liked it so much, because it's like... It's like you're starving in this horrible, horrible summer, and here's something to think about and enjoy that you're not getting anywhere else in the summer. So I totally understand why people
definitely
love
and
it.
I was fixating on the segment where Owen Wilson suggests the movie plot to Louis Buñuel.
Yeah.
And Buñuel can't wrap his mind around it.
Yeah.
Of course, if you know film history, you know he eventually made that film. And I have to say that Midnight in Paris contains my favorite line of the summer, when a drunken Ernest Hemingway looks up in a bar and yells, "Who wants to fight?"
I saw that, and I just, the whole time, I had not expectation, but it came out, I think I saw it a week later, and it was like, oh, this is a really charming movie. And my whole reaction to it was simply that I sat there and smiled, like, the entire movie. I just was,
yeah.
like, so, like, this is so pleasant and so comfortable, you know? It's
and
a
an
comfortable,
amazing
pleasant
fantasy.
Movie. Right.
For anyone who has any affection for books and things.
Well, what's interesting about it, too, though, is two things. One, the fantasy aspect of it isn't so, like, in a lot of movies, they would spend so much time on, like,
right,
this is
right,
crazy.
Right, right, right.
What's
yeah,
going
don't
on?
Don't you know, to go back in time,
right.
you have to pee into a fountain during a full moon.
And this is just like, well, I'm back in time, and let's
right.
move on with it, because I'm so sick of, like, it's almost like an origin story. I don't care about the origin of why he can
right.
go back
but
in time.
But the way they did it was wonderful and very literary. At midnight,
right.
a cab picks you up
right.
and
right.
transports you.
And there's
let's
not
go.
All this time devoted to him having to, like, convince others or even
right.
accept what he's seeing. It's just like, this happened. I want to do it again.
What I'll say about this is, JB is a very smart, very, very smart person. Very handsome, but also very smart. And JB knows all the references. JB gets the writers, the filmmakers, all that stuff. A lot of it I got, and some of it I didn't. And I think what I liked about it, too, was that it didn't matter.
Right.
Not so much that I could point out, because I feel like the whole audience, and I saw with an older audience, the whole audience is, like, in on the joke. They all say, like, that's Hemingway, that's Dolly, that's this, that, you know, and they feel good about themselves. I don't think that's a problem. But what I find interesting, too, is that even if I didn't get something, it was just a quick little aside, a quick little joke. If I get it, great. If not, it's like, oh, well, you know, like, I know that there's a joke there, and I just was kind of giddy about
it. And it was like a joke about literature
right.
in the middle of this horrible summer.
Right.
You know?
And then the robot transforms.
Exactly. It wasn't a talking animal.
What I keep wondering
is... Smurfette kissing a cock.
How many favors did he have to call in? How many arms did he have to twist so that the advertising campaign wouldn't give away the twist?
Yeah, right? Because in a world
when
today...
That ever
oh, yeah, right.
And that movie was the most, I think you guys told me this, the most successful Woody Allen movie ever
yeah.
in
yeah.
the theater.
It's made like over $50 million.
And it is a trifle. It's just, it's funny that like, and you, I don't know if it took him a lot of time to make or a lot of time to think about, but it is this whimsical nothing, but it's so great and just...
And I think by the end of the year, when you start seeing a lot of 10 best lists, and this is not to knock Midnight in Paris, which again is a movie I liked, but I think you're going to see a lot of Book of Eli effect. I think it's going to end up on a lot of 10 best lists, and in a better year, I don't think it would.
I wonder if it
yeah,
will get a nomination for Best Picture.
I think it might.
You know what else might?
I know for sure will The Help, which I have not seen, but it's making a bunch of money, and it's this year's Blind Side.
And we recently noticed that the television commercial is encouraging people to join the discussion, which is the filmmaker's crazy clever
yes.
way of acknowledging that it's sort of controversial because in 2011, people are getting a little sick of the trope that only the white person can help with these problems. I haven't seen it. I have some friends who were fans of the book. But if anything, they started showing that trailer so early in the year. I feel like I've seen it.
Yeah.
Well, I think it's you feel like you've seen it because
you have.
You have.
You know,
it's exactly the type
yeah.
of movie. I have not seen it either. My wife read the book, and my wife saw a sneak preview, and she wasn't a fan. I think because she liked the book, she saw the movie and just found parts of it laughable. I remember when I first saw the preview, I was going to feature it in the trailers column, and I had nothing to say about it. Like,
right.
Not even to say, like, and again, if you read this stupid trailers thing, you know it's not smart. It's just dumb comments. But I couldn't even think of something dumb or aside or a joke that just is like, well, this is Emma Stone, I guess, being serious, you know, and she's obviously very popular right now where I'd need to make a love video to her.
But what's unusual for me is that I've heard through the grapevine that the film features a front lawn full of toilets, which will usually get me into the theater. Because I don't think I've ever told you guys this before, but my first unproduced screenplay when I was an undergrad is called Front Lawn Full of Toilets.
Any other...
And so the myth grows.
Any other movies that you liked a lot this summer?
I did want to quickly mention Tucker and Dale versus Evil, which you reviewed.
Yeah.
And I liked a lot more than you did.
Oh, okay.
And you liked it.
I did, yeah. We never talked about it, really, any of us.
I'm close to loving it.
Okay.
Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
I believe it's available currently on video on demand if you're listening to this and you want to see what we're talking about. Or you can find a review of it at fthismovie.blogspot.com.
And we actually saw it together
yep.
at Terror in the Isles at the Venerable Portage Theater. And after we saw it, I sort of mulled it around in my mind for a while, for a week or two. And... really, really like it. The clever parts are very clever.
Yeah, and again, it's just a case where I wanted more of those. But again, does the movie just then become a conceit on which to hang these clever little gags? You
know? And another case where I went into it knowing nothing.
Yeah,
I had no idea what the film was about.
Yeah.
Which I think would improve everyone's movie-going experience if that happened more often.
Yeah, for sure.
You know what's interesting, though? I read some study, that's right, a study, boys,
yeah.
where they talked about expectations and results, meaning, like, people like us will read a lot of stuff online, magazines, where we want to find out about movies. I remember back in college, I used to read every issue of EW cover to cover to find out about the summer blockbusters and stuff like that. So obviously people who are in the know read that stuff. And likewise, fanboys, if you're a Harry Potter fan, you want to know more about the movie and know maybe some twists and turns, and you might actually spoil some things for yourself. And I read this study said people that spoil things for themselves actually, by a small margin, but still enjoy the movie more than those who go into it with no expectations.
Which leads to a question I wanted to ask, maybe as we wrap up.
I'm glad you have this question, because that was the end of my statement.
I do. Doubtless, most people listening to the podcast are aware of the Music Box Massacre, which occurs at the Music Box Theater, the happiest place on earth, every October. And the lineup has been announced. And, of course, we'll be there with bells on. But recently, on the internet, when you buy your ticket, they give you a bell.
Scary bell.
Bells included. Ooh. You have to wear your bell to get back in. It's like a wristband.
You sound it.
So the Music Box Massacre is a 24-hour horror movie marathon, and they announced the films in advance. Recently on the internet, I noticed another theater in Pennsylvania doing the same thing.
What?
The group is called Exhumed Films. Mm. And check this out, because this year's is already sold out. And theirs is until Halloween weekend.
Wow.
They've been doing it for 5 years. They always sell out. They do not announce the films in advance.
Really?
When you walk in, they do not give you any sort of program.
It's just...
You sit down, and they unspool.
Yikes.
Can you imagine?
No.
This is so funny. I'm watching your reactions. JB is like a kid on Christmas morning. His eyes are so wide, and Patrick is like disgusted.
I don't think I would go.
They do trailers. They do little short subjects.
I can tell you where I stand on this.
Obviously, people have learned to put their trust in the programmers because every year it's very, very popular. If you went 1 year and really got burned, you might not go again. I think it's a hell of an idea.
Mm. Well, I think you think that also. Maybe
I'm nervous just thinking.
You know they're
going
to be horror films, and you know the people putting it together are really into horror.
And that's
films.
What I think that your point is, that you've been burned a couple times on Music Box Massacre.
Never. Music Box Massacre is the greatest thing ever. Rusty, I love you.
No, don't listen to him. Once in a while,
not burned on the whole program, but like there's a couple stinkers mixed in.
Yeah, but some... I'm always like happy to have seen them.
Okay.
You know.
Okay, then I take it back. I was going to say because maybe, I don't know.
Usually the ones I have less interest in are during my personal break.
Your sojourn?
Yeah, I mean, every once in a while there's something I don't like, but I'm always happy to have seen it. You know? But that
So concept, you vote nay to that.
I could not handle that. I don't think I would go.
Patrick,
because
pretty...
even during a movie, even if it's a movie I love, even if they put on John Carpenter's The Thing, right? For the entire movie, I'm wondering what the next movie is, and I can't handle that. Patrick's, I need medication, everyone. fthismovie.blogspot.com. Send your medication.
Yeah, what's the... You never gave the email. By the way, now is the time.
fthismoviepodcast@gmail.com.
Jesus.
Because we have found the juncture at which Patrick and JB... diverge.
Let's quickly go. What movies haven't we mentioned?
I don't know. Super 8. I mean, I said at the beginning.
Hangover
2.
You want to talk about 2? But go on. Sorry.
I said that there was one movie that I loved and one movie that I liked. I loved Winnie the Pooh. Super 8 is the movie that I loved. And again, it's a movie that I'm fully aware of its flaws. I'm fully aware of why some people might not like it as much as I do. I ran into some trouble last week talking about Star Trek because some people felt like I overpraised that movie, and I'm aware of that, and I tried to cop to it the whole time. I know that my reaction to this is very personal. I'm not suggesting that this is a perfect movie. I just really loved it, and Super 8 is the same way. Super 8 is still my favorite movie of the year. That could change because now we're getting into the quote-unquote good movies, you know, the awards caliber movies. But Super 8 is my favorite movie of the year, and the movie that I really liked is Captain America.
Yeah.
Which there were, what, 4 or 5 big comic book movies that came out this year. I disliked, I don't know, Thor I'm completely lukewarm on now. Green Lantern I downright loathed. X-Men First Class I guess we didn't talk about.
Yeah, that was okay.
There were things in that movie I really liked.
Right,
yeah,
it was so
and then
good.
Other stuff that I was not a fan of.
It's really good up until the little disco party.
Oh my God.
And then it falls apart.
Well, the whole first part, and again, this, you know, speaks to a bigger issue with any movie. When it focuses on one person or two people, it's so interesting and so good and just personal. And then it starts to expand the cast. And
again, because it's a prequel, and I talked about this on the Star Trek show, I've rambled about this a lot lately, and X-Men First Class is sort of the movie that I always point to, is that so much of the movie is devoted to just table setting. Like, we have to get these things in place.
Right, but I so wish it would, like, take two movies, because the first one, I'm more interested in watching Magneto go to, Brazil and go back to...
Hunt down to Switzerland Nazis and stuff.
And just be... It's in it, obviously, maybe it's a throwback to, or for me at least, it reminds me of Inglourious Basterds, which is a movie that I love. But it was so interesting. And even the stuff with Dr. Octopus, I think it's
Dr. Octopus. Dr. Doom.
Dr. Doom, thank you. Where he's at Oxford and just, I mean, it's very interesting. And all of a sudden it's like, oh, now we're two sides and there's villains and it's right. like, it just becomes a mess. But Kevin Bacon was also great in it. But by the end, I was so invested. I was like, wow, this is going to be great. And by the end, I was just kind of like, you know.
That's kind of how I felt too. And, I'm a Matthew Vaughn fan and I like a lot of the period stuff. And there's a lot of stuff to like in that movie, but I just did not love it overall.
Right. Captain America, just really quickly, I'm a huge fan of World War II movies. And that, I don't know if that was done current day, I don't know how that would have worked, and I don't think, even if it did work, there's no way I would have responded to it the way I did, just because it was so sincere and earnest.
And when a period movie gets it right, it's a wonderful thing to see.
Yeah, I don't think it could have worked in current day, because I think the fact that they sort of set it in the past helps, they sort of build the tone into that.
Oh, sure.
You know?
It's a very Capra-esque, like, why we fight
type of... And we're so cynical now, I think, had they set it in current day, I think a lot of audience members would have rejected it. Like, that's not how the world feels now. Right. You know, and it's not necessarily how it felt then, but it is in our sort of collective memories.
It was really good, though. It was really just really well done. The action was really great, and I don't know.
It was fun, and it was well done, and all of the performances were, like, every time a new person showed up, you were happy to see that person again.
Right.
Great dialogue.
Yeah.
Some really good examples of good dialogue. And, of course, it asks the eternal question, who put the noose on the goose-stepping goons from Berlin?
I almost put that as my introduction to last week's trailer thing, but then I had the whole rant on Dean Richards because that guy...
Oh, let me do it on the podcast because I forgot to leave it as a comment. If you travel on the Kennedy Highway and in the Chicagoland area, you may have noticed relatively new billboards for Columbia College featuring some of their esteemed alumni. When you're going into the city, you pass Roz Varen, who's a traffic reporter, and she's a proud graduate of Columbia College. And when you're going back into the suburbs, who do you pass on the Columbia billboard? Dean Richards. Columbia might want to rethink that one in terms of our proud graduate.
No, if you're proud of a person who definitely kisses ass to all the cast of Smurfs.
Like, those people are on TV, and so they think, like, well, someone will recognize them because they can't put Janusz Kaminski on a billboard because, like, I can't say his name. I don't recognize his face.
Oh, the cinematographer from Saving Private Ryan.
Academy Award winner? Right. No, Roz Varen, who says...
Who's a traffic reporter.
Traffic.
Right. it's 36 minutes. It's jam till Nagel.
Not to disparage
and then you got
traffic
reporters. And literally, Dean Richards mispronounces words that any person who's ever watched anything on movies doesn't mispronounce. He says, instead of biopic, he says biopic, as if it's some sort of procedure. they had Showdown of the Living Dead. It was the remake from 1990, and it was like, and they're making their reference, it was drive me crazy, and the guy just, like, he kisses butt, and
but he's got pipes, and that's all that matters.
He does Victory.
He's got a very comforting voice.
Sorry.
Very avuncular teddy bear persona.
Podcast audience. Sorry, Don Bailey Hunt.
You know what? He's the entertainment reporter version of Tom Skilling on The Weather. Very comforting. Very.
You know what? I do not agree with that, because Tom Skilling has some skills. He's like a smart science guy.
It's in his name.
Right, just because his brother ruined Enron doesn't mean he's a bad guy.
Any?
I'm just talking about the voice.
Oh, okay.
Any movies high or low that we are neglecting to mention?
Our Idiot Brother. We talk about that.
Our Idiot Brother falls prey to something. Gene Siskel used to talk about this. Is this movie better than a movie of the cast having lunch? I thought all the performers are performers for which I have tremendous affection, and there was a couple jokes that I liked, but didn't you find that they were straitjacketed by a plot that you've seen hundreds of times?
I'm dying, by the way. That's the sound of me dying.
Every sister has a problem.
Yeah. It's gonna... No, absolutely. But I thought that, and again, maybe it's because I know last year there was a very definite ending to the summer. I believe
Patrick... We called it Piranha 3D.
Piranha 3D was the end of summer movies. And this year there wasn't really an end. Maybe Conan, which I think Patrick saw, right?
If we could have held out a few more weeks, we could have made it Shark Night 3D. But that's technically September.
And even now, like, it's Columbia. There's just nothing out right now.
For whatever reason, I consider our idiot brother to be the end of the summer.
Yeah.
Well, my point simply is, when I saw it the other day, it was in such a... Like, I had seen, again, coming off of Transformers and Green Lantern. And I saw it, and it wasn't horrible bosses. It was just like a... It was a sweet movie. It was just very quiet, and there was jokes, but it wasn't aggressive. There were some jokes that he makes some astute observations. I think there's some funny things that are said, and I laughed a couple times and just left feeling okay about it.
No, and that's what Dana Stevens liked about it on Slate, a critic that I'm very fond of, that it did have the guts to be laid back and not obnoxious. And I will tell you this: Who Wants to Fight? My favorite line of the summer. My second favorite line, spoiler alert, two guys and a dog making candles. What a cliche. That's a line in the film.
One, please.
Yeah. Well, it's good, you know. It's something you Netflix and, you know,
right.
And be like, oh, that was pleasant. Time to go to bed, you know.
Okay. Well, that's pretty much what I thought. But I felt like they were cynically taking advantage of the fact that I like Paul Rudd. That I like Zooey Deschanel.
Oh, yeah, the whole cast is just, you know, they're all fun people. Even the T.J. Miller is the stoner guy, and his girlfriend, I forgot her name, Catherine something, but she is great. She's
Did you notice that either this wasn't developed in the script or something big got cut out? The mom.
That was always drinking wine?
Yeah.
Right.
And that was never developed. Although one line that my wife liked was that when he moves back, she says, those people don't have time for people like us. Yeah. And that was such an interesting line, and that whole idea is undeveloped, too.
Yeah, it would have been, it could be, there's a better movie in it,
yeah.
There's a more interesting movie in it, but for what it was, I was just like,
Rashida Jones? Wasted.
Yeah, and also, what is she wearing? Whatever.
Well, you know the decision they made there.
Yeah, but it's just...
Now we'll talk about things that you have no idea what we're referring to, because we're loopy!
I wanted to mention also...
30 minutes or less, did you guys talk about that? I didn't see it. Is it just a boring...
There's a review on our Facebook page. It's like, it's not... I laughed a couple times, but it's really short. It's
subject matter where you could really make a terrific comedy.
Mm.
But you would have to have a really complex grasp of a tone. And this film is all over the map. And again, like A Little Help, expects us to laugh at serious things.
Right.
And then take funny things very seriously. It's very,
all
it's
over
actually
the place.
Very disturbing the more you think about it. And I think Aziz sort of walks off with the film. I mean,
yeah, because I think the casting is problematic. I think Jesse Eisenberg is miscast. I think Danny McBride...
We're so sick of seeing him play the same douchebag.
He and Nick Swardson are both kind of doing the same thing they always do,
Bucky.
So I kind of tune out when they're on screen because it's just like, you know what they're going to say and do. So I think maybe with a... Not even necessarily a stronger cast, but just a different cast, maybe the movie could have been...
A really dark comedy about bad times.
Right.
Well,
but you know, August is sort of, unfortunately, we're done by August, and so things just sort of limp out into theaters, and it's like, your expectations are always low. You know, I saw Conan and Fright Night in the same weekend.
August, the trash can of the movie.
It was a dark, dark weekend, but a movie that we didn't really, we mentioned it a little bit or at the beginning of the show, is Rise of the Apes.
Oh, yeah.
Which is sort of the big surprise hit of the summer, because it did come out in August, and I think the studio didn't really know what they had on their hands. And people are really responding to it. A lot of people are talking about it. What a pleasant surprise. It was so much better than I thought it was going to be.
But isn't just that telling?
Yeah. I mean,
that
my expectations were in the basement.
This is the summer of...
Right.
It was so much better than the shit that we're handed on a regular basis.
Right. And I thought it was fine. I don't have, you know, major problems with it, but I did not love it the way that a lot of people...
Yeah.
Have loved
it. Was,
it.
But I, again, my response to the movie is like everyone's. It was like, that was better than I thought it might be. And With that being said, it's like, was it really something that I want to watch again? Is it something that I would recommend? It's just like, I don't know, maybe. Like,
yeah, because it's not one, it's not enough of one or the other. Like, it's not a total brainless action movie, which I appreciate, but so it's not quite like entertaining enough in that way.
Right.
But it's also doesn't really work as sort of thoughtful science fiction, I don't think. There are ideas present in the movie, but
well, your
undercut
biggest,
by like James Franco, you know.
One of your biggest issues, and this is spoilers, but if you know the source material, it's not really a spoiler. The end of the movie, it's like the rise of the Planet of the Apes.
My question is just, maybe I don't understand the filmmaker's intentions. Are they completely rebooting the Planet of the Apes franchise? And if so, I guess they can screw around with the events in whatever way they want. But if you've seen the Planet of the Apes movies, this has nothing to do with those in terms of how things are established.
And that's the reason why I haven't seen it, that every time I think about seeing it, an alarm goes off in my head, because I have a tremendous childhood affection for the Apes movies.
He's now pointing to the giant bust
of Roddy McDowall,
of Cornelius,
that holds
in the
DVDs of the original series with real monkey hair.
But it's a thing too where, to your point, if they're going to reboot everything, there's so many references. There's a Charlton Heston movie in the background.
Right.
Draco Malfoy at one point shouts out an iconic line from the original movie. That is, it's comical, but it's
right.
if you, but
Caesar's
it's again
playing with a little Statue of Liberty toy at one point. So
right.
there's all these references.
I bet I can
to
guess
the
what the iconic
movie.
Line
yeah.
is,
yeah,
and I haven't
can.
Seen it.
And,
it's
and
so,
it yanks you out of the movie.
But it's
so hard.
It, again, it's one of those things to the Puss in Boots preview where it's like audience is like, ha ha ha, I am part of this.
Well,
this
just
is
like Charlton Heston
me.
Showed up for no reason in the Tim Burton
mm-hmm.
atrocity.
God, I don't even remember that. Thank God.
And this is much better than the
Absolutely.
Tim Burton movie. I don't want to bag on Rise
this
of the Planet
of
the
Apes. This has better Helena Bonham Carter than the Tim Burton movie.
Again,
and she's
maybe,
not even in it.
Maybe it's just about expectations, because the opposite of what you're saying, where everybody's expecting it to be bad and it's good, you know, I saw it a few weeks after it had been out, and it had been built up for me, so then I go in and I'm like, well, that's not as good as I was promised by people. So I guess it's all just
obviously.
About managing expectations.
And even which, I'll go back real quick to what you said about 30 Minutes or Less. I actually felt the same way about Horrible Bosses, too, in terms of its tone, in terms of... It's serious and funny, and it's about murder, but it's about, you know...
You want to shake these comedies and say, make up your mind.
Right. They don't. No movie makes up its mind, and I don't know.
JB, best movie of the summer?
Not counting Cave of Forgotten Dreams, which is sort of fringy.
That's mine, by the way, Cave of Forgotten Dreams.
I'd have to say Captain America.
Okay. And yours was Captain
yeah.
America or
Super 8. Probably Captain America, although Super
yeah.
8 was really fun. And I mean, again, there's problems with it, and I have the problems that everyone has with it, and I am not as far gone as you are in terms of its, you know, like...
And coming around the stretch, it's Super 8 and Captain America, Super 8, Captain America,
yeah.
which film will win?
But again,
like
I
fact that we're just talking about, you know, two, maybe three movies.
Yeah, right, and even Midnight
that,
in Paris is something that, like,
right.
I'm thinking, that's actually a movie I probably might go to... The most readily, I mean, if I had all three in front of me, I'm like, it's the shortest, it's the quickest, it's the easiest to watch any scene and just feel good for me.
My big problem with Super 8 is that it never answered the question of who put the noose on the goose-stepping goons from Berlin.
Well, a couple super, it's like, why is it called Super 8? Why, you know, why,
right.
why
no,
does it take place in the past? Why is it all about the big Cloverfield monster? You know, it's, but it's still like a very sweet movie, and those performances are unbelievable. You know?
Yeah, if nothing else, the characters and the actors are really great. All right, well, here's hoping the rest of the year picks up, because I can't make a top 10 list.
I got a
unless
bad,
it does.
I got a bad feeling about this.
Yeah, me too. But thank you guys for talking about the summer.
Thank you.
You can always email us at fthismoviepodcast@gmail.com if you want to nominate your best and or worst for the summer. Please do. And maybe we'll talk about it on a show in the next month, because, of course, September is just the build-up to October.
You know, it's funny, driving
it's only a month away, everybody.
Driving
Scary
over
movie
here,
month.
It's a little cool at night now. And
it's coming.
Like,
it's coming, everyone.
Like fall. It was
yeah.
great.
Scary Movie Month coming in October, so everybody get excited now. All right, that's it, everybody.
Boom, boom, boom.